content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's Halef. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. Ah, summer. The weather is hot, 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 and tempers are short, short, short. That's right. School is out in most places, and parents are struggling, snuggling their demons, darlings. Sounds like we could use a few reminders about parenting. The first, always remember that you are on your child's side, even if they are acting like little demons. From the book, Best Friends, Occasional Enemies, The Lighter Side of Life as a Mother and Daughter, written by Elisa Scottolini and Francesca Saratella, and published in 2011. The chapter, Meow, by Francesca. The other day, I was walking my dog, Pip, and talking to my mom on the phone, like I always do. Dog walking is prime time for calls home. I speak into headphones that are plugged into my cell, so I'm one of those people who appears to be talking to herself. But this is New York, so that's normal. Anyway, I was halfway through my route, yapping away to my mom, when Pip shot in front of me, jerking the leash. Then he whipped around to face me, ears up, eyes wide, looking ready to jump into my arms like Scooby-Doo. I turned around to see what had spooked him. There stood a calico cat, back arched, tail bristling, green eyes glowering in our direction. So I thought, oh, silly Pip inadvertently startled this nice cat. The cat emitted a low, rumbling growl. Correction! Pip inadvertently startled this not-so-nice cat. The cat took several slow and deliberate steps toward us. Okay, so this cat has an issue with dogs. Maybe it was abused by a dog in its kittenhood. That's okay. I'll just take the dog out of the equation. I picked Pip up and backed away, but the cat locked eyes with me. The further I retreated, the faster the cat advanced. I put on my best calm, assertive dog trainer voice and said, "Hey, hey, no! Bad cat! No!" Someone tell Cesar Millan that what works on a pit bull does not work on a feisty feline. I was shocked when the cat yowled and took a swipe at my shin, after which point I did the only sensible thing, turn tail and run. So there I was, running down the sidewalk, clutching Pip to my chest like some refugee puppy, with the crazy cat chasing me. The entire thing was so absurd, I started laughing as I ran, which made me seem even more maniacal to the startled pedestrians as I streaked past. Down the street at the corner, there was a giant puddle by the curb, and in it I saw my opportunity for escape. I leaped over the puddle in what could only be called a leap of faith, as Pip's flying ears obscured my vision. We didn't quite make it. My right foot landed in the edge of the puddle, splashing dirty street water all over myself. Great! But my water landing did succeed in thwarting Terminator Cat, who recoiled at the puddle and, with a twitchy kick of its hind leg, slunk back home to its lair. "What is going on? Are you okay?" my mother's voice said in my ear. I had completely forgotten that I still had my earbuds in and my mom on the phone. I did my best to tell her the story, winded and spitting dog hair out of my mouth. "I don't know what got the cat so mad. I love cats, and you know Pip. He never bothers the cats back home." This last part was only half true. "I'm sure you didn't do anything to provoke it," my mom said. "Some cats just want to take a swipe at you, like that writing teacher." "Huh?" I readjusted the headphone in my ear. "That jerky writing professor, the one who was so mean to you." Gotta love mom bias. I remembered now. In college, it took me 2 years to screw up the courage to apply for a creative writing class. I got into a workshop with my first choice professor, a smart female author and single mother to one daughter. Sound familiar? I was sure we would get along. But we didn't. I did everything I could to win her over. I arrived in class promptly, participated in discussion, devoted myself to each assignment, and turned pieces in on time, double-spaced, single-sided, Arial font, just like she'd asked. Yet, somehow, everything I said or did rubbed her the wrong way. Our troubles culminated on the day of my first story workshop, when she opened the discussion by decimating my piece. The awkward silence that followed her diatribe was impenetrable. No one in the class wanted to say anything. We were dismissed early. Now, don't get me wrong. I can take criticism. I'm a big girl. So I waited until I was in the privacy of my dorm room to cry. Yeah, that wasn't really one of the high points of college, Mom. I ended up dropping the class, remember? I do remember. However, didn't you find out later that 4 other students in her advanced workshop had also dropped the class? Actually, I think it was 5. Right! And dropping it wasn't all you did. The next semester, you got into another workshop with the department head. And a year later, you graduated with honors and a novel as your award-winning thesis. Yes, my mom brags about me, to me. Aren't moms the best? So, what I think you're saying is the cat today was an assassin sent by my disgruntled writing professor? A hired hit cat? The point is, she continued, you believed in yourself. Not everyone will like you. Some people just want to take swipes at you. You need to trust yourself enough to ignore them. Or at least have a mother who loves you enough to pick you up and run away. You know, the right pet can bring joy to a parent's heart. The wrong pet, well, that can be subjective. You can make the call after our next reminder. Remember that they mean well, probably. From the book, Never Buy a Raccoon at a Gas Station, Life Lessons for Children of All Ages, written by Beth DeJens and published in 2019, Chapter 2, The Kitchen Sink is Not for Raccoons. Since he was only a few weeks old when we adopted him, Bandit the raccoon quickly learned to go outside for the bathroom, following the lead of our 2 dogs. When he needed to go, either for the bathroom or just to play in the woods behind our house, he would scratch on the back door, and we'd let him outside. When he was ready to come home, he'd scratch on the back door to let us know he was home, and inside he'd come. He slept most of the day, and the back of the couch was his favorite spot. We weren't too worried about him tracking in germs from outside, partly because it was the 1980s, and people simply didn't obsess about germs like they do now. But it was mostly because Bandit was so incredibly clean. He loved to wash his hands, which was good because he was often muddy from his fishing trips in the stream behind our house. I suppose instinct took the reins when it came to his hunting trips. Like most raccoons, Bandit loved to eat fish, frogs, crawfish, and even insects. When it was time to go fishing, Bandit would trot along beside me until we got close to the creek just behind our backyard. Then he would run ahead, so by the time I caught up, he already had his little fist deep in the mud, feeling for crawfish to snack on. After sitting by the stream, watching the surface for what seemed like forever, his hand would dart into the water, dive deep in the mud, and come up with a crawfish or minnow in his fist. Whatever he pulled out of the stream or a hollow log, he would examine it and wash it clean in the stream before munching on it. He especially loved to bring his catch into the house with him, where he would wash it and eat it as if it were the grand prize of all time. Bandit was our family pet for many, many years, and he always kept us thoroughly entertained. We all loved him, but Mom and Bandit had a bit of a complicated relationship, kind of a love-hate situation. In Mom's defense, Bandit was an all-around scoundrel who delighted in playing pranks, especially if Mom was on the receiving end. He would hide things, play keep-away, and a host of other charades. One of Bandit's favorite games to play with Mom involved him watching her for a while and then sneaking up when she wasn't looking to take whatever he had determined she most needed at the moment. For example, if she were outside weeding a flower bed, he would watch long enough to see that she frequently reached for her gardening spade. Then he would wait for her to step away, or even look away, long enough for him to sneak up and grab it. Then came his favorite part of the game. He would run away with his prize and hide it somewhere for us to find later, or never. Bandit was truly a bandit in this game. He didn't even care if she caught him running away with her things. A good round of Chase the Raccoon made the game that much more fun. His favorite thing to hide was her shoes. He had an uncanny knack for knowing exactly which shoes she most needed, and he would choose those shoes to hide. It was always a special treat when I would find one of his hiding spots, because it would always be stuffed with the most random and surprising items. One of his favorite treasure troves was a corner of my closet, where I would find small kitchen items, dog toys, Mom's shoes, Laura's cassette tapes, and whatever else caught our little bandit's eye. Mom loved animals and was incredibly tolerant of the endless supply of animals that invaded her home. For obvious reasons, the most resistance we ever got from Mom was whenever animals were in the kitchen. Bandit seemed to sense how protective she was of her kitchen, so he took every opportunity to exploit it. True to a raccoon's natural instincts, Bandit was downright OCD about his food. Every day, we gave him fresh fruits and vegetables in a food dish. He always washed his food before eating, and preferred a running stream of water, I guess because it was closest to the running streams he would wash food in if he'd been outside. If he only had access to the dog's water bowl, he would use it, but with plenty of judgmental glares in our direction to express his disapproval. His disapproval was only exceeded by the dog's opinion on the matter. As the only raccoon in the family, Bandit was a bit spoiled, and he took full advantage of it. For a raccoon, Bandit had an incredible capacity for telling time. He never missed an opportunity to let us know it was his mealtime. Wherever we were in the house, Bandit would come to find one of us and sit up on his back legs, chattering insistently until we went to the kitchen to get his food. Perched on my shoulder and holding on to my hair for balance, he would supervise while I filled a plate with food that Mom accurately noted cost more than our own. If Mom wasn't around, I would turn the faucet on just enough to make a steady stream. Bandit would carry one piece of food at a time to the sink to wash it under the faucet. I would put a chair in front of the sink so he could easily hop up to his wilderness stream. Cleanliness may be next to godliness, but we quickly learned that moms don't appreciate wildlife washing food in their kitchen sinks. One day, when Bandit was washing his dinner in the kitchen sink, I thought Mom was outside in the garden. I guess we lost track of time, washing and eating his carrots and blackberries and zucchini. Bandit was perched on the edge of the sink, mostly on the countertop, but close enough to the faucet that he could reach over and wash his dinner without falling into the sink. I thought we had been quite responsible, since he was sitting on a clean towel I had laid out precisely for him to sit on. I was wrong. Mom had apparently been in the garden, picking tomatoes to go with dinner, when she walked into her clean kitchen and saw a raccoon on the countertop. She flew into action. Dropping an armful of tomatoes on the floor, Mom grabbed the broom and yelled, "Out! Out! Out! Get him out of here!" She marched over to the sink and turned off the water. Bandit did not see the problem and aired his disapproval by standing up on his back feet with his two little fists in the air and chattering with all the intimidation he could muster. His plan worked, and, broom or not, Mom ran into the living room. Pleased with his performance, Bandit casually hopped to the floor, picked up a tomato to wash in the dog's water bowl, and trotted off to the living room to eat it. That was the end of Bandit's indoor running streams, except when Mom wasn't around to see it, and he had to settle for washing his food in a bowl of water instead. He wasn't happy about losing his access to the kitchen sink, but I believe he took quite a bit of pleasure in driving the dogs crazy instead. Bandit's lesson. Bandit's devotion to hygiene, especially when it came to his food, was admirable and even appreciated. However, there's a time and a place for everything. As we both learned that day, the time to wash his food in a running sink was not when Mom was around, and the place to wash his food was definitely not the kitchen sink. So we set up a food washing station for Bandit far away from the kitchen and well supplied with fresh water. He used it sometimes, but preferred to harass the dogs by washing his food in their water bowl. What a rascal! Wow, that had to take a lot of patience. And if you're running low on patience, our last story today will help with the next reminder. Be patient. Really patient. Really, really patient. From the book Muddling Through, Perspectives on Parenting, written by Bill Lepp and published in 2012, Chapter 6, About Patience, and Believe Me, I'm No Expert. Fishing. Fishing. Such a soothing word. So much of the inflection is put on the syllable shing. It's almost as if people are trying to calm you down, put you to sleep when they say the word. Would you like to go fishing? So it seemed like a good idea. I asked my kids, do you want to go fishing? We were on the muddy bank of the Sunflower River in Yazoo County, Mississippi. It wasn't more than 110 degrees. The riverbank was coated in a dried layer of gumbo mud that cracked like glass when we walked across it. The dried shards were deadly sharp and chopped away at our ankles. Once the dried crust on the surface of the mud shattered, a soupy, super-dense mud layer was revealed. Mud so dense, it not only sucked off your shoes, but picked your pocket and read your mind as well. The kids, of course, thought this was funny. They skipped back and forth across the mud like insects playing a dangerous game in a field of Venus flytraps. Go back and get your shoes, I said, as calmly as possible. I was carrying 3 fishing poles, 3 canteens, 1 tackle box, 1 carton of fermented chicken livers, 3 bottles of bug spray, a box of matches, a hatchet, a cooler, and 3 empty 5-gallon buckets. I was very slowly pushing forward through waist-deep mud, trying to stay calm. My mantra goes like this. You are normal. Every parent has considered selling their children to roving gypsies. Come on, gypsies, rove on by. Once we finally arrive at the fishing spot, I expect things to go exactly as I plan. We'll set the buckets on the ground, bottoms up so we can sit on them. I'll hand out the fishing poles, spray on the bug spray, and pass around the bait. Everybody will bait up, cast, sit patiently and quietly until a fish strikes, and then we will reel them in, rejoice, and start the process again. Nice and relaxing. I hand a bucket to my daughter. I turn to hand a bucket to my son. He has broken through the crust of the mud and is heading toward the river in an all-out slide. Moving quickly, but being careful not to begin sliding myself, I reach to rescue my son. He's waist-deep in the water by the time I get a hand on his belt and drag him back to dry land. I sit him on his bucket in time to see that my daughter has made her way to the slick path my son has gouged in the mud. She is now sliding toward the river. She is shouting, "Whee!" I manage to nab her before she gets wet, but only because in my haste I bust the crust and slide into the river ahead of her. I climb out of the water, smile serenely, and say, "Okay, kids, it is now time to fish." My son swats at a mosquito. You might imagine that the mosquitoes on a central Mississippi riverbank in the middle of July would be fierce. You would be wrong. They are beyond fierce. They are more inimical than an opposition Congress. They are bloodthirstier than any super PAC. They suck you dry and leave you feeling icky and itchy. If your feet are stuck in the mud when the mosquitoes attack, there is a chance your legs will be left in the mud while your head and torso are carried away. And whereas I might occasionally harbor the idea of selling my children to roving gypsies, I would feel bad if the kids were carried off by mosquitoes. The poor mosquitoes just wouldn't know what to do with them. I break out the DEET-free, steroid-free, MSG-free, mercury-free, fragrance-free, environmentally friendly SPF 50 non-toxic bug spray, main ingredient bug attractant, and douse the kids. Sit on your buckets, I say gently, lovingly. Sit on your buckets, my little sweethearts, and let us prepare to fish. There is a smile on my face. I am not shouting, "Doggone it, children, we came out here to fish. Now quit messing around, get out of the mud, sit on your bucket, pick up your fishing pole and fish." No, no, I am not saying that. Or at least no one but the children can hear me saying that. Well, no one but the children and God. No one but the children, God, and anyone within about 8 square miles of the riverbank. Sound carries in the Mississippi Delta. Patience, I'm whispering to myself. Just a little patience. I start to whistle the tune. I'm now taking parental advice from Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses. How can this go poorly? I take a deep breath and say, "Okay, guys, let's get to the fishing. Bait up." I find that the best catfish bait in the world is chicken liver sealed in a plastic carton and left in the Mississippi sun for at least 3 days. The aroma is unforgettable, the texture sublimely slippery, like Spam. The kids won't touch it. They are making faces like it's gross. I can't understand why they are so appalled by the inside of a chicken. This is fishing. By the time I have my son's hook baited, my daughter has managed to flip her 5-gallon bucket over and sit on the open end. The result is that she has fallen into the bucket, bottom first. Only her head, arms, and legs are visible. She thinks it is hilarious. My son thinks it is hilarious. He's bigger than she is, so when he goes into the bucket, he is twice as stuck as my daughter. They are laughing hysterically. I'm wondering how far they would float. Maybe some exiled group down the river needs a couple of Moseses. Deep breath. I extract the kids from the buckets. A swarm of mosquitoes has built a condo in my ear. A team of horseflies has decided my shoulder blade is delicious. I bait the kids' hooks and explain again how to cast. We have Zebco reels, so they just have to push the button and swing the rod over their shoulders. My son does a pretty good job. My daughter's rod comes forward and the bait jettisons over the river. The hook, however, is still at the end of her rod. She didn't push the button. I cast and catch a catfish. I haul it in. It stings my hand in several places. The kids are amazed. Suddenly they want to fish. But I still have to bait the hooks. Have you ever found yourself trying to accomplish something with your children, teach them something, and all the while they are focused on everything else in the world? I don't know how many times I've said something which is the equivalent to, "Quit enjoying that! This isn't the fun we came to have!" Trying to teach your kids a skill or interest them in the nuances of a hobby can be difficult. You want them to enjoy the activity because the activity is important or fun to you. However, chances are you weren't born with the skills to master the task. You had to learn. Think back. Did the person who taught you the skill get frustrated and yell because you weren't focusing? Or did the person let you enjoy the experience and teach you at the same time? I'm not good at baseball. I didn't really enjoy baseball as a child, because I was scared of the ball. I had a coach who got so upset about my fear that he turned me around, yelled, "Doggone it, the ball doesn't hurt that bad," and then he threw the ball at my back. Guess what? It hurt as bad as I had imagined, and I never played much baseball after that. Part of patience is perseverance. You have to remind yourself what the goal is. What are you trying to accomplish with your kids? Are you trying to turn them into instant anglers? Or are you trying to teach them that fishing is fun, unless you are the fish, and spending time in nature is worthwhile? Look at the goal. If my kids remember that fishing is fun because you get to sit in buckets and slide in the mud, at least they remember that fishing is fun. I fully admit that I am not the most patient person in the world, not even close. I want things to go the way I want them to go, and I want them to go that way now. But I do try. Adults, remember, you learned from someone. Your kids probably aren't going to be experts right from the start. Ask yourself, why do I want my child to have this skill? Am I teaching my child to catch a ball because if he doesn't learn, fire will rain from the sky? Or am I teaching my child to catch a ball so he will enjoy it? Also, try to remember that just because you are interested in something, that doesn't mean your kids will be, or that they have to enjoy it as well. Maybe it is an activity that they need to wait a few years to learn. Maybe it is something they just don't want to know. I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't teach your kids things they don't want to know. You have to teach them to write whether they want to learn or not. Table manners in my book are a must. These things, however, aren't learned in one sitting. Persevere. Try not to let one act at the table ruin the whole meal. Bike riding is a classic example of something you want to be fun, but starts out very frustrating. You want your child to learn to ride a bike, so you gear them up with a helmet and a bike, and you run behind them with one hand on the bike seat, and when you let go, they scream and fall and don't want to try again. That's frustrating, and you say, "Maddie, if you would just try harder, you could get it. Don't be scared. Just do it." Your child probably is trying hard. And when you are scared, having someone tell you, "Don't be scared," doesn't really help. Look at it from their point of view. If they crash, it is going to hurt them, not you. Keep your cool. Try again. Try again. Smile. Kids, there isn't much you can do here. You get the parents you get. Some adults are more patient than others. All I can tell you is that your parents aren't trying to teach you things just so that they can get frustrated and yell. If they are trying to get you to learn something, they probably think it is important. Just try your hardest. Don't be scared. And tell your folks to stay cool. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's Halaf. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's Halaf is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.